what is it that you do that focuses upon the future direction of your college?
We do several things. One is that I've walked around, I've talked to the staff, and we have formed a shared vision as to what our college should become. And I continue to emphasize that it's not simply Dick McDowell's vision of what the college should become, but many of the people who are here have been here for a long time, longer than I have, and they all also have expectations of the college. I think I'm in a unique position because I do a lot of community work, and therefore I find out what the community's expectations are, and from all of that, we've developed a shared vision of what it is that we want to become. Following that, we have developed a rather extensive planning process in which we do as they do in strategic planning, look at the external environment and see what's happening in the world around us, and develop then some strategies for how we're going to improve our programs, how we're going to better serve students, how we're going to develop ourselves, our staff, to keep up to date on the new technology. And the theme of the whole thing is a constant improvement of the college to better serve students. And when we do this in this way, people buy into it because it's their college, it's their job, it's their curriculum, it's their program, and they're looking for support, and they're pleased to have somebody support them. Therefore, they work hard, they have ownership, and it's all of us carrying it out and not just somebody from the top giving the orders that says, here's what we're going to do today.
That's so important, and certainly that's what you talked to us about before as well.
Yes.
Let me ask if you can describe an incident that required you to direct or redirect the focus of the college, and were you successful?
We've done a number of things, and probably in the area of financing. One of the shortcomings of planning often is that we sit around and we dream up grandiose kind of things, but often we don't have the resources to be able to do that. I did two things in the area of finance, well, three things in the area of finance that have been significant. One is that we collectively got a millage pass, which was the first millage that we got passed in 20 years to improve the tax base of the college. Secondly, we got the foundation going, and the year I came to the college, the foundation raised $1,700, and since that time, we've raised $600,000.
Wow.
The third is we have a land development project going. The college needed money to move ahead, and we took a portion of the college land, a 17-acre plot that was located next to the expressway, and we have developed that with a developer to build some commercial buildings on there. They're putting two office buildings, a hotel, and a restaurant. That first office building is up, 70% leased. They're in the process of building the second office building and the hotel. But what we will do is generate revenue that we can carry out some of our plans from our strategic planning process, and we will therefore have the resources to be able to do the things that we wanted to do. And of course, before I came here, none of that had happened.
Great example.
Well,
let me move into the second area.
Okay.
How would you explain or characterize your particular style of leadership?
I'm very participatory, but I also know exactly, that is, I have a strong sense of what needs to be done, and there's an opportunity for people to express opinions. There's opportunities for people to make improvements in their own area that they have responsibility for, but I'd have to describe myself as being somewhat impatient, anxious to get on with the show, and wanting to be decisive and not wait forever for some group to either take some action or make some recommendations. We have probably 50 committees on campus dealing with various kind of things, and they meet on a regular basis and provide input. And once we've decided something, though, it's time to put it into place and get it moving.
Dick, when you say they provide input, do you mean that basically they're advisory, or do they have decision making powers that, or are there decisions often acted upon?
Advisory, although not all advisory to me, if it's matters of curriculum or those kind of things. There is a curriculum committee in which we have some 21 faculty involved, department reps and assistant deans and deans and so forth. What we try to do at each level is have those people who are involved with a particular item go ahead and implement it, and it doesn't require coming to the president's office for permission to do all those things. Major things like new curriculum changes or changes in policy, of course, need to come to me, but many of the things that they're going to do within a department, they go ahead and decide how they're going to schedule or how they're going to conduct their business, and I think that's important. I think for it to be hung up in the bureaucracy does not allow us to be responsive, and therefore we decide which things need to come to the vice presidents or the president or the board of trustees, and those things that don't can be decided by the dean or by the department or whatever. And again, we need to have the ability to respond quickly, and that's been the strength of the community college. We've tried to eliminate a lot of the bureaucracy that would keep that from happening.
Great. Let me ask you a second question around that. Can you tell me about a particular situation which demonstrates your leadership style? What happened and what was the outcome?
I guess on a day-to-day basis, the walking around, talking to people, talking to faculty, how's it going kind of thing, you become aware of things that they are concerned about. Sometimes it's a matter of an item, again, that should have been purchased that got hung up in the bureaucracy or whatever. When I come back to my office, first place, I don't tell them, yes, I'm going to do that, but if the roof's leaking, if there's an item that needs to be repaired or whatever, then my job is to come back and find the person who's going to take care of that. And I don't simply try to go out and be the hero at the expense of the people who are between me and that person in the organization. So I guess there have been instances when I've been in the tech building and have talked with the faculty member teaching word processing where she needed to have some action on some of her equipment, where I would come back and talk with the vice president. He in turn would talk to the people who needed to get that equipment installed and operating. But, you know, there are 100 examples like that, and the word processing equipment is one example, but there's a lot of other kind of things like that that occur in that.
Sure, and we have some examples of that as well.
I beg your pardon?
We have examples of that as well on the other tape. The third area that I wanted to inquire about was, how would you describe your relations with students and staff in the institution?
This has been a unique place to work because of the relationship with, first, the faculty, and secondly, the students. The students have always been fun, and of course they're anxious to succeed, and we enjoy helping them succeed, so that's been super. Faculty, when I came, last three times they had gone through collective bargaining and been on strike. It's fair to say that morale was down, that people were kind of putting in their time and going home. There was very little participation in college committees, and you went around and asked people to participate in things, or they weren't very anxious to do that. We started something called Mutual Gains Collective Bargaining, and it has been super in that it has taken away all the animosity, and the chief negotiator for the faculty indicated that the chief strength of this process was that we are building to improve the college rather than doing all the power trade-offs that you do in normal negotiations. Now, as a result of that, there has been this and our planning process, I think, have been equally responsible in encouraging people to participate because we have been action-oriented and they know that something's going to happen whether they get their input or not. So they better, if they want to see a change and they want to help determine what that change is going to be, they better participate, and they do. As a result of that, it's fun to walk around on the campus and talk with people because you hear about their dreams and their hopes and the exciting things that they're doing, which I know that I couldn't make happen by myself, and it ends up just being super. So faculty and I have an excellent relationship. The students and I, usually you can tell by what kind of issues hit the student newspaper, and the kind of issues that have hit the student newspaper have been positive, and every now and then they'll take a jab at us, but there hasn't been anything serious in the last couple of years, so that's a pretty good indication of what's going on.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. How do you, as a college president, motivate others around you?
Again, sounds like a broken record, but if you involve people in the life of the college, if you involve people in the decision-making process to indicate your support of what it is that they're doing, then that's the motivation. We know that that we can't simply pay people a salary, or that raises aren't motivational. They can become negative, but aren't necessarily positive. They try to treat people fairly, and fair is a very important value as far as we're concerned in when there are conflicts, and trying to be fair to all sides. In Rotary, they say, is it fair to all concerned? And at Schoolcraft, we try to decide things based on, is it fair to all concerned? And if you have a genuine interest in what people are doing, they become motivated because they know that they're not out there fighting the fight themselves, putting in all this effort, and nobody cares. I told the story to the group when I was down in November about all the programs we have for the staff, that our staff development and staff assistance, the wellness program for our staff, and the mutual gains bargaining and all this stuff. And I can remember talking to a faculty member, and she said, boy, things are really going well around here. And I said, yes, that's because we have this program and that program and so forth. And she said, but that's not why it's important. And I said, well, you know, tell me why. And she says, you know who we are by name. You listen to us, and you care about what we're doing.
Amen.
And that becomes the most powerful technique, I think, that any person in a leadership position could use in trying to establish communications, in trying to motivate, or trying to support the work that people are doing on behalf of the college. So, sometimes we stumble on these by accident, and we're not doing them for those reasons. But it takes some work on our part when you get an organization of a pretty good size to continue to review the names to make sure you know who everybody is and what they do in your organization. And that includes the support staff as well.
You know, it's interesting.
Who the maintenance people are, and who all the secretaries are, and all the various offices and so forth.
One of the comments has been made to me, which really follows along what you're saying, is I make a point of talking up to people. Which,
that's an interesting concept, isn't it?
Yeah, really. I mean, it's talking about what you're saying, valuing people and making them feel important in the organization, which, of course, they are, and that's the only way you have a good organization. You can't do it by yourself.
It's amazing how much effort they're willing to put forth if they assume somebody knows about it and if somebody cares about what they're doing. They'll give you 100%.
Well, you know, the other side of the coin, which I think is incredible, is it's amazing how little, particularly, people who are competent need
to
keep them going.
Yeah, for the most part, they want us to run interference and remove the barricades or the obstacles and say, just let me do my job. But internally, they want more than that. They want us to remove the barricades, but then they want us to know what a great job they're doing, and whatever we can do to promote that is important. One of the examples I used, I think, when we talked before, is when you walk around, and I found one of our English faculty using an Apple computer, and it was for his own record keeping. And I said, well, what do you do with that? Put your grades on it. He says, well, more than that. He says, I write, when the student writes a paper and I correct it, I write all his comments on it, and then I give it back to the student. Now, I record the grade in my book, but when they write the next paper, I can't remember which student had which problems with what kind of writing skills. And so he says, what I do is I use the computer, and I'll put the student's name down, and I will write down all the comments that I wrote in the paper. And then when I go back and read the next paper, I'll see if those are the same kind of things or whether there's any improvement. Now, that's a good technique, but the recognition comes from, I went in the lunchroom, and I'm sitting there with a bunch of the faculty and staff, and we're sitting there talking, and I said, John Nathan came up with a good idea. John, why don't you share what you're doing with the Apple computer in your writing classes? So he sat there and told about 20 faculty. He got more recognition from that, also knowing, having the faculty know that I knew it. It became, I think, it was tremendous to him to get that kind of recognition, not only from his peers, but from me.
Sure.
And in front of the others. So, those are the kind of things you find out when you walk around.
That's wonderful. Let me now move into the fifth area.
Okay.
How do your personal values impact your position as college president?
We can't separate who we are, and that includes the good and the bad in our personality, the good and the bad in whatever work styles we've adopted over the years, and the good job fit is where we are doing what we like to do. And we are doing this as our means of employment. I really believe in the job fit or the job match. When I interviewed for the job, I talked with the Board of Trustees, I first talked with the staff, and I said, what is it you're looking for? And the kind of things that they identified as the college needing to do or the kind of things that I was interested in having the college do. I developed a list, and they developed a list, and when we talked about it, nearly every one of the items matched. Personally, that has to be true. If the college needs somebody who enjoys people and enjoys going out into the community and talking with community leaders, then that person will end up doing a good job in that area. If a person feels like they can make their best contribution in the classroom and are comfortable with that kind of a circumstance, then these other things seem like they're an annoyance or a distraction to the central job. The values of caring for people, I think, is very important. The value of recognizing the worth of the individual, I think, is very important. And that worth of the individual has to be not related to the position they have within the organization, whether that person is a first semester student who is struggling to make it through the term, or whether that person is a custodian in the organization, or somebody who cooks food in the cafeteria, or whether that's somebody is a faculty member or whoever. When you get to meet the people, when you get to meet some of their family members, and you see that they have kids growing up, and they have the same expectations in life that we do, then you can relate to them as wanting to succeed in their job. So I think the recognition of the value of the person is extremely important in anybody to have in a leadership position. The other is you look for quality because you want to be proud of the organization and you want other people to be proud of it, but quality has to be something that you're all about before you can really share this as far as the college is concerned. It's a leading by example and so the caring and the quality, the creativity of going out and discovering new ways to do things or new ways to improve old things has to be what you're about if you expect the organization to respond in kind. So my opinion is the institution really is a reflection of the staff, and it's not only the president, it's all of us. Because if we have staff who are surly and curt and whatever, then that's how the college is perceived. The person that comes up to the secretary or the grass cutter and asks for directions and is treated very brusquely ends up thinking that everybody at the college is that way. So I think it's important for all of us to reflect within the organization in which we work the personal values that we have, but also to try to translate those into some organizational values that other people buy into, and of course that's the job of leadership. We've been successful in doing that. In fact, we had a session 5 or 6 years ago now where we brought about 40 people in who were campus leaders and talked about values and said, you know, let's try to decide what makes us, what is it about Schoolcraft that we think makes us better than other colleges? And we went down through about 80 different values and ended up with 3. And we adopted these as our values and we communicate them. And every now and then somebody will call us on them. The values are quality in everything we do. It's caring for students, staff, and people in the community. Creativity and developing the new and improving the old. And one time we had a staff member who was not carrying out his responsibilities, and he got a reprimand. And one of the people on the committee was a drafting instructor who sent me a note and said that he didn't like the way that we had treated this other staff member. And he said, "Is this caring for the staff?" You know, it's on one hand you're trying to improve the organization. On the other hand, what do you do with people who don't respond or people who don't carry out basic responsibilities? And trying to resolve that in a way that is a caring, trying to improve the individual thing. But the point is that apparently the values had some meaning, because when we do something that seems to contradict that, the staff call us on it, and they say, "We said we were a caring institution, and what you did not seem to be a caring action." And I said, "Uh-oh, you know, we better go back and rethink that." So apparently we've put it into place, and it seems to have meaning.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this final question.
Okay.
I mentioned the blue sky question earlier.
Yeah.
If you could change education in any way, what would it be? How might you accomplish this change or changes?
I guess some of the things that become frustrating about the learning process is that we have regimented it in such a way that that in many times has a tendency to lead away from student learning. And I think of this in terms of what society has done as far as peer pressure is concerned. I think of the, you know, if you visit any elementary school and you talk to second or third graders and you go in and you ask them something and everybody puts their hand up and they want to answer and they want to talk, sometime when they get to about sixth or seventh grade, they are more concerned with what their classmates think of them than whether or not they give a correct answer to a teacher. And by the time they get to high school and college, they have settled into a style that means read the chapter, answer the questions at the end of the chapter, answer questions on a test, and this somehow indicates that people are educated. I guess the thing that I've learned in my teaching experience is that when I graduated from college, and I thought I had this great amount of knowledge, in the first year I taught, I probably learned more than I learned all the time that I was in college, because you sit there and you read it and you say, "I really don't understand this," and you have to find out what it's all about before you can explain it to somebody else. I guess a couple things. One is, if we could find some way to keep the enthusiasm that people have for learning when they're very young, and this is something that they apparently recapture when they get older, because people come back and they're less concerned about what people think about them, and they begin to generate some of this enthusiasm again. I was over this morning in the cafeteria talking to a fellow in his 70s, and he comes and takes several classes a semester just because he likes to learn and he likes being around people, and, you know, he's just on fire about learning. That's one part. The other part is that as students are going through this, particularly through high school and for the first few years are with us, having them be able to prioritize learning in their own schedule of activities as being a high priority. We find students who come and want to put in the time to earn the credit as opposed to to getting excited about learning new things and learn for the sake of learning, to find out things that are interesting, whether they have any application or not. And it would be great if we collectively in education could recapture some of that spirit and recapture some of that enthusiasm. And and we know that as these young people come up, in particular, they have jobs and they have cars and they have family obligations and they have all these other things, and somehow try to squeeze education in as well. I guess the saving grace is, after they go out and they get their job and they find out what they don't know, they come back and they they learn some more of that, and maybe then they're ready to learn, and in that way they aren't really any different than I was.
Well, that's true, and I'm sure we've all gone through that, the doldrums in the middle.
Yeah, but it seems to me that that we have to find a way to recapture that enthusiasm and that spirit, and again, particularly with the young, to help them with some good experience on career choices, because the biggest problem we have today is that people have not had enough experiences to say, I'd like to do this or I'd like to do that. And many people go through quite a few years before they really settle in on a career, and of course then with this changing technology they change careers two or three times, and that's okay. But the other side is to help people with their time management and their priorities and their decision making, including careers, to help make education a priority, to know that the kind of things that we have to offer or the kind of learning experiences that they can have will really prepare them for life. Then on the other side, change some things in the classroom that gets away from read chapter 3 and we're going to have a test on it. You know, I think it's our responsibility to make it exciting, to bring it alive. And I just attended an Apple conference last month, and I saw some new computers that they're bringing out that has the compact disc that has the laser reader on it. And as you sit there and you read Shakespeare, you can see on a split screen a videotape of that play being performed.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
You can read something in history, and they will bring up some paintings of the period, some architecture of the period, some descriptions of what a normal day was like for a person living in that time, and it's a way to bring it alive. And I guess my dream for education would be that we would find some way to bring it alive, and not so much factual information that we think we have to memorize and keep on the tip of our tongue forever, which we know that isn't being educated.
It sounds like
a long roundabout answer, but
well, that's great.
But I think the more we can make education, or make a subject or an area of study come alive and become meaningful, is the kind of thing that we need to do in order to make the students excited. My first comment isn't to say that it's all their fault that they've become bored with their education. I think it's our fault, and maybe some of these things that I'm talking about can help recapture some of that enthusiasm.
Great response. Any final comments that you want to make on tape?
No, I have found one thing that I said no, but I'm going to say yes. The thing that I have enjoyed doing is, I think leadership involves being out with people, finding out new things, and finding better ways to do things. I've enjoyed in the past several years the opportunities to come and be involved with colleagues in a workshop, in a classroom, whatever, whether it's presenting or being a workshop participant, and listening to ideas that people have about new things that are happening. Now, like the student that I just talked about, many times they don't have any practical application, but they just become something that's exciting to think about. And I've probably done more presentations in the last 3 years than I had in previous years. But the preparation for that presentation is exciting as well, in that you have to go out and find out what the new things are that are happening. And I guess a little bit of that takes us back to our teaching days. And, you know...